Hello and welcome back to the Bad Boxing Podcast with me, Tris Dixon, top trainer Adam Booth, and former world super featherweight champion Alex Arthur. Yesterday, you might have seen on social media that I was picking Daniel Dubois to beat Joe Joyce, who Adam Booth had already predicted would win the big fight of British heavyweights. And Adam, along with Joe Joyce, had his hand raised, metaphorically, albeit in the end. Adam, is that what you expected? Obviously, picking Joyce, is that what you expected to see last night?
Well, I knew that when he's focused, Joe's an effective boxer. He has got absolutely zero coordinated rhythm, which makes him really unpredictable, especially when he jabs. And if you look at him as an amateur, he lands lots of jabs because he doesn't have a coordinated rhythm, but he's got very hard hands. His grip strength is ridiculous. So the jab doesn't have to be technically perfect for it still to be hurtful. I remember bandaging his hands for the fights that I worked with him, and I couldn't bandage it tight enough. I would do the bandage and the tape as tight as I could pull it, and he'd still be asking for it tighter. That's how hard his grip strength is. It's like a brick in there. And because he's got that natural strength, I could see that right from the start when he was landing the jabs, and Dubois didn't have, I don't think he prepared to have to take the jab off him. I think essentially that one shot won him the fight.
Alex, what I didn't hear your prediction pre-fight. It was like herding fish trying to get us all together last week. Which way
you
were going? Obviously, now you can be an aftertimer and say, "Oh yeah, I thought Joyce was going to win in round 10 by a shut eye." But where are you going?
I'm not going to sit here and say that, just because that would be a massive lie. My prediction was, I probably go as far as saying I was on the fence a wee bit, because I thought that if Dubois had any chance of winning, it had to be early. I thought, because of the nature of his boxing style, or what we've seen so far, at least, he's a very dynamic guy. He's very big. He's very powerful. Very, very explosive. But he was up against a guy who has a fantastic chin, who has a tremendous engine, just like Adam says, doesn't fight at a regular tempo. He punches very offbeat as well. His jab doesn't have any timing, which makes it unbelievably effective. And Dubois couldn't cope with that. He couldn't cope with the sort of steady tempo as well. It looked like he was struggling terribly to cope with the rhythm that the rhythm and the pace that the fight was being boxed at, although it wasn't particularly high, I wouldn't say. He just struggled to come to terms with everything in the ring last night. And, you know, there's a big future for that lad as well. You know, there's definitely a bright future for him. It's not the end of the line. I think it's a really good learning fight. The one thing I would say was, did he perhaps not show the kind of heart that we would have liked to have seen a young guy like that show? The metal, the steel that you really need to be a top-level fighter. Could he have gotten up? He looked quite clear-eyed to me. He seemed quite coherent. And, you know, I don't think he was terribly hurt. He was hurt, but did he have a broken heart and did he quit?
Yeah, I think we'll come on to that later. I mean, I want to give Joe Joyce more plaudits to kick off, because I think Joyce hasn't got the attention afterwards. Everyone is talking about Dubois, and obviously we'll come on to that, but I really want to make Joyce the focal point, because he proved me wrong. He blew me away with how he boxed. He got settled behind his unsettled jab, with doubling it, stepping back, letting Dubois fall short, and then doubling up that jab again. He was moving really well. Stuff. And you know, I think what's different for Joyce as well, he's obviously got this amateur pedigree, which people are right to talk about, but he doesn't box like an amateur. He doesn't, you know, he's never had that style where you think straight left, straight right, maybe a left hook behind it. He doesn't have that conventional style. And I think that's one of the reasons why I was picking Dubois beforehand, was because Joe Joyce likes an old-fashioned tear-up, and he likes to come forward and have it out with you. And I thought if he had it out with Daniel Dubois, that was the wrong move. But that's not how he chose to fight. Adam, what do you reckon?
Well, Joe doesn't box like a boxer, let alone amateur or pro. If you stripped away all the hype and you just put him in a ring with somebody else and you'd never seen him before, you think he was a novice sometimes because of just how uncoordinated and sort of lack of rhythmical his movements are. But he's a strong man with a good chin, a competitive mindset, with great physical attributes, who's much more of an athlete than his, again, his boxing rhythm coordination would leave you to believe. But I, before the fight, I kept harping on about the amateur grade that he had in terms of that he boxed Usyk, he boxed Filip Hergovic, he boxed Tony Yoka, he'd sparred for years with Anthony Joshua. So he's had years of...
Did he not fight a top-flight Cuban as well, Adam? I think he fought a couple of the top Cuban guys as well.
I'm just talking about the current... The reason why I mentioned those names is that those dudes now are in the top 10 of the world. So he's actually boxed quite a few of the top 10 ranked and highly regarded fighters in the world. And if my memory serves me right, he beat Filip Hergovic. And I think Filip Hergovic is the best of the bunch just under the champions because I know how good he is. So
yeah, he's good.
With when you have that depth of experience and competitiveness, and you're still healthy and fit, and you're fighting someone, yes, with very good physical attributes and a very good foundation and base to become a good fighter and potentially a world champion, but with the polar opposite in terms of experience to what Joe had. I can imagine that Joe was supremely confident based on what he had done. I think Daniel was supremely confident based on what he thought he could do. But Dubois went in there with a massive element of unknown, and for me it played out. There was an experienced high grade amateur who's now world ranked professional against someone with very limited amateur experience and a fast track pro career, still with phenomenal ability to come back and evolve as a fighter. But I think that the difference was last night. Was that experience. And in fairness to Dubois, the fight was close, right? The fight, if you're scoring it, it wasn't a wide score going into the 10th round. So Dubois should take a lot of confidence from the fact that at least he knew he could compete with a dude with that amount of experience, having such little himself.
Well, I know we've wanted to talk about scoring for a while, and this isn't the day, but one official, John Latham, had Dubois 8 rounds up after 9.
Wow. Well, that's wrong. That's wrong.
Yeah, that's terrible, man. Which wow.
Who was that?
John Latham. It's one of the worst ones I've seen for a long time, I think, to only give Joyce one of the first 9. Alex, let me ask you this. If you were in Dubois' corner, what would you have been telling him to do differently?
Oh, that's a good one, Tris, to be honest. I think probably try and shut the space down a little bit. I think staying on the outside so much and trying... He almost gave me the idea he was trying to sort of time Joyce, which was looking impossible. It was never going to happen. So in that scenario, I would have probably said, going past 5-6 rounds, put your chin on your chest, put your hands around your eyebrows, walk them down, walk towards them, and try and get up, mix your attacks up for a start. So switch from head to body, switch from body back to head, but close down the space, hands up nice and high, chin down low, and try and get close and try and get something off big. Because other than that, there was just no other way, was there?
Adam, agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, when you're giving someone an instruction in the corner, you can only base those instructions on what you know the fight can do.
But
what Alex is saying is a great answer because it's relevant of what your style is. If you tuck your chin down, put your hands up, brace up, and just try and walk through distance to get to a distance where at least you can land some shots, that's probably actually as basic as that sounds. That's probably at that point in time all you could have said to him because he wasn't showing the head movement or the leg work to find the distance that he wanted. Joe was impossible to time because it's like dancing with someone that can't hear any music. The one thing that Daniel tried to do is, a few occasions, he did try to bludgeon his way into it, right? By just loading up and trying to jump on him. But Joe's chin and experience just meant that that element was resisted. So I think Alex's advice is right. It's like, right, nothing's working here. Not even trying to blast him out. Tuck up tight, get up close, and just try and work him. That was probably all that was left last night, based on what he had done up until that point.
You know, Joe's about 35. He's been around the block now. He didn't have his trainer in his corner as well. He didn't have Ismael Salas in his corner, who failed a COVID test the day before. So he did extraordinarily well with a team that he wasn't overly familiar with in the corner. But is there room to improve for Joyce still at 35? Adam?
I think Joe is what he is. It's about him being, and honestly, you know, I've worked with Joe, and I don't think it matters who the coach is. Joe's style is Joe type style, and he's, you know, he can box longer, he can be aggressive going forward. But he's, in terms of his arsenal, it's, you know, it's very, very limited arsenal. And at his age, I think the most important thing is that he is fit, healthy, happy. And throw him in there because, like I said, the fight, I thought the fight was close. And that means that somebody with as little experience as Dubois was able to make that fight close. Now, what if you match that with AJ or Tyson Fury?
Or Usyk, who he wants.
Or Tony Yoka. I'd like to see him fight Tony Yoka. So I think it's a great win for Joe, and they just got to hurry up and make the big fights for him now while he's got this new momentum behind him.
Yeah.
Alex, we talked about Chisora, who fought Usyk a few weeks ago. Now we've had a good close look at Usyk and Joe Joyce. How would you see that one going?
What?
Joe and Usyk. Obviously, a rematch from the amateurs.
Yeah, well, Usyk's, I mean, he can't box the same way. He's really got to try and put pressure on Usyk. But like I said, Usyk or Tony Yoka are potential big money fights that are winnable fights for Joe. And I think they're the ones that they should chase.
Okay. Alex, you mentioned it a little while ago. The Q word was chucked around an awful lot last night. Carl Frampton said it on the BT Sport show. And then obviously social media lights up. Dubois was called a quitter. It's not something I or advocate at all. And, you know, I don't know whether he quit or not. I wouldn't call him a quitter. The guy is a hard man. He's a good fighter. And he risks, you know, we don't know sometimes, you know, he's got nerve damage to that eye, he's got an injured orbital bone. You know, the guy, there's more at stake sometimes in life than going out on your shield. And for me, you know, when you see his family around him, and obviously he's got young siblings and he's got dad, they would rather have a guy who's licking his wounds today rather than a guy who's got a detached retina and facing the end of his career or worse than that.
No, certainly, of course. You know, when you think it like that, Tris, when you say it like that, I totally get it. I understand it. But, you know, it just does it, you know, does it bode well for his future in terms of, you know, when the going gets tough? Look, this is the sport we're in. It's like, you know, it's a hot business, and it's a sport where you have to, you don't have to. You're risking your life. You're risking your life every time. And, you know, how willing are you far? How far are you willing to go? You know, to make that sort of like statement that you're willing to go through anything to become a champion. How much do you want it? You know, these are all things that you do seriously have to consider. And you know, as when the going gets tough like that, and things aren't going his way in future, is he just going to swallow and quit? That will certainly give some of his future opposition some confidence, that's for sure. You know, if I can stick it out with this big fellow and just keep chipping away at him, eventually he's going to give up. But again, you know, I didn't know how bad the injuries were. I didn't know exactly what it was that he'd suffered at the time. But as a fighter or as a former fighter, you kind of do sit there as a person who was maybe, you know, known for going out in their shield or whatever. You kind of sit there and say, you know, how could he just quit like that? A massive stage like that, massive opportunity, and you know, the biggest weight class in boxing, you know, the most popular, and the money that's involved in that, in the heavyweight division. So yeah, there's so many factors, isn't there? How much do you want it? How much you know, how much are you willing to sacrifice of yourself to get what you want?
Adam, do you see Dubois as a quitter?
No, I don't. It's not like he was getting winded with body shots or dropped and buzzed with headshots. Let's talk about I don't like judgment too much. I like opinions and trying to talk about why certain things can and can't happen, but not to judge another man, because it's not right to judge someone whose shoes you're not standing in. But if you try that, right? He's in a fight. He's in the biggest fight of his life, and he's exerting a lot of physical energy. He's tired. He's getting hit. And his eyes closed, right? Which means, essentially, he's blind out of that left eye because it's closed. Now, if he's had nerve damage, as that eye is getting hit, that will feel like a hot needle going into the eyeball. So just think about this. You're in a fight and you're losing your way in the fight a little bit and you're trying to get back in it, but you're in a fight. All of these things are being tested. And whilst that's happening, you're blind in one eye. You can't see yourself. We could see the swelling. He couldn't see the swelling. But what he could feel would have been, I imagine, like a hot needle going into an eye he couldn't see out of. So now all of a sudden you're in a fight. And you may be in your subconscious thinking, am I blind in one eye? How can that not play out? We can't judge. And to call him a quitter when that is very likely the symptoms he was feeling, if he's got a fractured orbital bone and nerve damage in an eye that was swollen shut, essentially he's blind and he may have been fighting, wondering whether he was permanently blind. So I think to call a man like that, who'd obviously been hit on the eye quite a few times before he decided that enough was enough, I think that's unfair.
I wonder if he will regret it, period. I also wonder if he'll regret it more if he'd seen the scorecards and knowing that he was up on two of them. One thing it might do, though, and I don't know if you'll agree with this, Alex, I'll ask you this, is it might stiffen his resolve. You know, you can't say, you know, once someone's called it a day once, they'll call it a day again. It might be something that he really wants to make amends with, and he does want to go back into the trenches to prove himself down the line.
Yeah, well, I think you know, based on his on his characteristics and his personality, which definitely come into play when you're fighting, he doesn't seem to me, and he never seemed to me, the kind of lad that had much quit in him anyway. Will it strengthen his resolve? Will it make him a little bit tougher? Probably, yes. I probably go as far as saying it would. It would make him tougher. It probably will give him a little bit more mental focus and strength to help him in the future. And I think that his future fights that do get tough, he will always remember. Last night, he will always remember it, and what he does with that situation and scenario when he's there is when we will see essentially what mindset and what characteristics are inside him. They'll come out. That is when they'll come out.
Adam, when he comes back and his eyes healed, etc., and we're sure he will come back, how would you bring him back?
I think he needs to add elements to his game. He tried last night, but he tried the same things over and over again. there was a brief moment in the fight where it actually looked like he loosened up a little bit and actually had a little bit of a flow, but it didn't last very long. I think he should look at that because he did look very heavy and bulky, like he was just relying on his brute power to win the day whilst getting hit with jabs constantly. But there was a point where he actually tired so much that he couldn't hold that tension anymore. And I saw a little period where he looked loose, he was quicker, and his movements were more fluid. You know, when you talk about people like Ray Robinson and Cassius Clay and Ray
Logan, like round five or six, was that? It would have been around that period.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely around that time where...
Yeah, it definitely was.
Like, Joe, the jab came out a little bit quicker all of a sudden. And there was a looseness in the shoulders.
Yeah, I remember it.
Ray Robinson, Cassius Clay, all these guys say it's how you move that makes you a good fighter. And if he can add some rhythm and flow to his obvious natural power and physical attributes, rather than just relying on the natural power, I think you then got the foundations to build footwork, head movement, setups, claiming of distance, opening of distance, whatever you want to do. Once you build that base rhythm. But there was a very brief period last night. Like, I think you're right, Alex. There was a brief period where he looked like he had a little bit of a flow, but he didn't last very long.
No, didn't.
Alex, what have you done? What have you done to get the police on your back?
You can hear them quite clearly out there, can't you? Yeah.
Any final thoughts from either of you guys on Dubois Joyce, or are you happy to move on?
Yeah, I'm good to move on now. We touched on it lots.
Okay. There was also a fight over in Staples Center last night. Mike Tyson fought Roy Jones Jr. in an exhibition. It was 8-2s. It was 12 ounces, 12-ounce gloves, no headgear. I've got to say, I didn't buy it. I didn't watch it live. And I thought, what would make me buy it, knowing the result, knowing the outcome? Would it be a quick Tyson win? Would it be good reports or whatever? And as it turned out, I watched it knowing that we were going to speak about it. I probably wouldn't have watched it otherwise. And it was kind of a weird sensation watching it, because they did show flashes of what they could do. Tyson with some head movement and attacking out of the crouch that we were so familiar with him 30 odd years ago, and Roy hands down by his side and popping Tyson from range. And obviously there was a lot of holding from Roy's part as well, but I was absolutely torn between nostalgic and safety first emotions throughout the build-up of whatever it was. Alex, what was your take on the event?
Well, first of all, I thought that, you know, the fact that they've put themselves through the rigors of training camp again, and, you know, they've really dedicated their time to getting in the best shape they possibly could for their age to perform in this sort of shit time that we're in just now, I think it says quite a lot about them as men. On the other side, I must admit, Tris, like you, I didn't watch it. I did flick on some of the highlights this morning just to see what kind of spectacle I was missing as I slept peacefully with no police looking for me last night. And I'm not overly surprised to what I've seen. Like you said, not that much to touch on, really. Flashes of both their old selves, albeit a little bit slower. They didn't physically look anything like they looked when they were at their absolute peak or in their prime. So, yeah, it was a bit odd. It was a bit odd. It really was. It was slightly uncomfortable as well, I would say.
Adam, what was your take?
I didn't watch it. I watched the interview after, when is it Steve Gray interviewed them?
Jim Gray, sorry.
Steve Gray's the referee.
That's right.
And all I saw was one thing, that they were both happy.
Yeah.
They were both happy and relieved. They'd indulged their narcissism, they'd indulge their ego, they'd earned the right to do that from everything they'd given us over the years. And yeah. I was just, I felt happy to see how happy and content they were having done
it. Yeah, I get that. Yeah. Great point.
So would you like to see, Adam, would you like to see like a Masters style thing like this continue? Because obviously Tyson's saying he'll fight again, and you know, there's line them up, Riddick Bowe, Shannon Briggs, you name it.
I don't know. I mean, we know what they were in their prime, and we've seen, they are legends and they are great because we've seen everything. We've seen the highs and the lows and the comebacks. So we know what they are as fighters, and it's up to them if they want to do it. I didn't watch it because I didn't think it was necessarily going to be a competitive fight, but I did flick on social media. And when I saw the interview and I saw how, firstly, I thought Mike looked in fantastic shape. I thought Roy looked a bit bloated. I thought Tyson looked in great shape. But they both just looked happy, just so content that they've done it.
They did look so happy.
And that's all I take from it, and that's good enough for me. And if others are going to do it, that's what I hope. I don't care whether they have entertaining fights. I just care whether at the end of it, that's how they feel.
So, Alex, on that note, who are you calling out?
see, Booth is a nice man, eh? Told you he's a nice man, Chris.
Adam can train you for your comeback in the Veterans League.
At Bridgerweight.
He's got your name written all over it.
I knew he was going to start on my weight. I knew it. Oh, man. I don't know. Maybe Big Enzo Macronelli if I could make weight.
Oh, dear. You know, that would do decent numbers, you and Big Enzo.
Hang on a second. whoa, hang on a second. Alex, how tall are you?
5'9".
You know he's 6'5", don't you?
Yeah.
Careful, because he'll be getting excited now.
Yeah, because Enzo does want one more as well, doesn't he? And then just in closing, Adam, I'll put this to you. Last week, obviously, we were going to talk a little bit about Conor Benn and Josh Kelly. Conor, well, you were there. You were both there for DAZN and Sky Sports, respectively. Adam, is that a fight? I know you've got Avanesian on your mind for Josh first, but do you envisage the Conor Benn fight? And will it be a big fight? And will it deliver?
I'm not going to indulge you on that one. We know that anything can happen in boxing, but I also know that Josh has actually got a much more challenging fight at the end of January against Avanesian. So, you know, I indulged it last week. I was there with Sky, and I gave my thoughts and my opinions, but I'm done with that.
Alex, what's your take, mate? Alex, where are you going with that? Is that a fight that you'd like to see, Josh versus Conor Benn?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fight I would like to see. Conor Benn did show a lot of signs of improvement. He's definitely had to learn, maybe a wee bit unfair saying, he's had to learn the hard way. Listen, we know Josh has got all that pedigree, all that quality. He happens to have a decent trainer as well that could probably give him a couple of tips. But, I actually bumped into Conor, who's a lovely lad, by the way, in person, after the fight, or the next game morning after breakfast. And he doesn't look to me like a full welterweight. Now, that may be a bit unfair because, as we all know, I'm a Bridgerweight now. But in terms of being a former super featherweight, and you know, no, my height's never changed any. I just felt so much physically bigger than him when I shook his hand and gave him a hug. And you know, of course, I've been around boxing my whole life, and I still to this day can tell pretty well who's a physical specimen, who's a big fighter for their weight. And he just, to me, doesn't look like a 147 Tris. I have seen Josh in real life as well. Thick set lad, you know, muscular. I think he's even a bit taller than me as well. And then, of course, you know, lads like Josh Taylor and stuff like that as well. They're big. And Conor Benn doesn't seem like a big physical welterweight. But in terms of, you know, boxing ability and everything that comes into play, you know, Josh Kelly's, one of the most talented young guys I've seen in quite some time. And Conor Benn is, you know, learning the trade as he goes. You know, he's not got any amateur pedigree whatsoever. So he's learning on the job, and that's bloody tough, man.
Adam, anything you'd like to add to that, or have you shut up shop now?
No, yeah, I mean, we've just spent most of this podcast talking about someone with immense amateur experience against a young, exciting prospect that didn't have any amateur pedigree. I think there's a lot in that, and I agree with Alex's assessment on the physicality of it as well. But I've learned to never say never, because when David Hay fought Audley Harrison, David had sparred with Audley 40, 50 times. And I don't think there's any spar any round where Audley got the better of it. Yet come fight week and Boxing News did a preview, Audley Harrison was the favourite.
Yeah. Well, so, Adam, actually...
hold on, whoa. Hang on. What do you mean Audley Harrison was the favourite?
So it was a poll.
Oh, okay.
More people picked Audley to win.
Really?
In the boxing, yeah, than David.
I was going to say, because I wrote the preview for that, and I think I called it, I was a round or two out. But, yeah, wow. That's fine. If that's the choice of the people, that's fine.
Well, both guys were my teammates on GB. I knew them both well. Actually seen them spar at Crystal Palace Sports Complex. And just before we were going, I think we were going to Kuala Lumpur in 1998 for the Commonwealth Games. And I think that David was beaten in the ABAs by, I think it was Courtney Fry in the final. But David still...
Jim Twite. No, he stopped Courtney Fry. David got beat by Jim Twite.
Oh, is that who beat him that year? Is that right?
Yeah.
Jim Twite, yeah. And then Courtney must have beat Twite in the final, right? Did he?
No. David stopped Courtney Fry in the London final. Right. And David lost in the national semis to Jim Twite.
Right. Ah, right. Well, how come Courtney ended up in Kuala Lumpur?
Because they sent, even though David had beaten him, they sent Courtney to the qualifiers.
Got you. So, yeah, but David was still in the GB camp, sparring with all the lads and helping all the lads out. And I seen him spar Audley, and he caught the better of him then as well. Audley looked terribly frustrated in the spar. Everyone was round the ring watching it because, you know, Audley was a pretty big deal at the time. And I think he was about 84 kilos to Audley's like 109 or something like that. It was ridiculous. But David got the better of him.
Brilliant. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much. I'm glad that we managed to herd the fish into one spot for to get us out there this evening. And we hope to be back with you on the Bad Boxing podcast before too long next time. Guys, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, boys.
See you later.